I sing and play guitar in a band. It's different. When I'm working, I actually don't like to listen to music a lot of the times. Because the garden is just a song in itself. Planes going by, cars going by, dogs barking. That's all part of that type of music.
Welcome back to Project Good Food on this special Earth Day episode, where we dig deep into the roots of food justice, sustainability, and community power. Today, we're joined by very special guests Christopher and Jordan from Treedom Cooperative, a San Diego-based nonprofit that's transforming urban spaces into food-producing ecosystems. We'll explore how they're turning urban spaces into gardens, capturing rainwater, and building a more just and regenerative future, one tree at a time. So let's just get into it real loose. Welcome. Tell us a little bit about Treedom and your work with Treedom.
Treedom was started in 2020 by myself and Jordan. Mm-hmm. We actually started the organization with the name Blue Light Exchange. And that was one of our ideas, to bring people who grow food in their yards together, create a network and a platform for people to barter and exchange produce and goods that were produced by them. We've taken a turn since then, but that was the original idea that created all of this.
Yeah. And then it, like, as all things do, it just evolves into something that you can never expect, you know? And I think what we realized when we were getting to a point of recognizing what community needs more, it's not more, I guess, but like, we wanted to share the information more than we wanted to, or like just as much as we wanted to share the produce and the experience and the food. And so that's why Treedom started engaging more with an educational point of view as well.
Speaking of education, I want to ask you, so it seems like that's a really central part of Treedom's mission, is education and teaching. What types of workshops or resources do you offer to the community?
So what we started off with at first was sort of a hands-on experience with implementing projects that we were contracted or hired to perform. So that gave the community an opportunity to have hands-on experience of learning, like, what sort of just like what we were inspired to do within permaculture and earth tending. But recently, we started pulling in community members from just around locally, and each community member had their own unique offering to teach. So we had like mushroom log inoculation, we did polyculture, which is, Chris can talk more on that. Just all sorts of different gardening and permaculture workshops, but taught specifically from like other community members, because we have so much information, like a wellspring of information within the community.
Yeah, one of the workshops we did was a natural plastering workshop. And that is such a unique way of building, because it is using the resources we have right on site. No need to harvest, you know, quarried rock from miles away and bring it, process it. It's all right here in front of us. And we kind of use that with all of our building and our implementation, utilizing resources that are around us, local as much as possible. And that keeps the energy strong and reinvested into the community as opposed to, you know, going elsewhere.
When did we meet? It's been a wonderful partnership. I'm just saying this. I don't know where we are on the script, but without you all, the work would have taken a different turn. I know that we met during or right before the pandemic situation. We had a couple of garden refresh at the Mount Hope Community Garden, and you all came through. And you would work in between the work days. Like, we would have a weekend scheduled for work, but then you all would work and put structures up and things for other people to do. So how do you recall us meeting? I recall how we met this next time around because I saw your new name, because I don't think Treedom was the name. Mm-mm. Back then, I just knew the two of you and that you were the best. And then when we started doing this new work in terms of our good food district, it's like, well, who else should we work with? And I saw your name and looked up your website and thought, it's them. And that's how we started chapter two. But
we had a picture of us together on the website. I don't know if you noticed that.
I just saw that photo, actually.
That's when ago. I had dreadlocks. That was... right before COVID, there was a Love Tito's garden refresh, and we put up some of the structures at the Mount Hope Community Garden that are now have been taken down and moved to the new garden. Mm-hmm. But that first initial contact was through Casey Munoz, which she did a lot of placemaking efforts and projects before she moved to Texas.
But with us, I think there was her work, but then y'all, she relied a lot on you all to do some of the things like those structures. They would just do things. One day it would just be a lump of wood somewhere, and then they would go and make a couple errands, and they would come and lead a crew in putting almost every wooden structure that was at Mount Hope.
Yeah. So where does that come from? How does one go from being born to this work, right, that leads you to not just this work, but it seems like it's work that matters and that's really trying to change communities and ecosystems. And I know you guys are planting native plants and you're doing OAs and you're doing really, really specific work. So one, how do you get there? And then my second question, if you remember it, is how do you choose the spaces that you want to transform?
Well, when two people love each other, for me personally, my journey with, I've always grown up more creative and artistic and not necessarily fitting into the mold of anything that I was taught growing up and never feeling like I really had a vision or a place of future, not really knowing what the world was going to come to. I felt pretty devastated in high school, like realizing just like the state of the world, where we're going. And I didn't really know what to do then. I just felt hopeless and angry. but then over time, I started realizing like how much community was important to me and realizing that there's something that sort of lightens the load on the heart when you feel like you're not alone in those situations and those feelings. And I feel for me that came with meeting certain communities when I was a bit older. And then I started just engaging more in gardening, personal gardening with my dad. He's a great gardener. Really interested in sociology and also anthropology. So just kind of interested in like human nature and like what we have done for millennia and kind of where we're going and where we're headed. And this little like bird kept chattering in my ear over the years, like permaculture, you should do a permaculture course. Like, and then finally when the pandemic hit, I was like, well, now I have a ton of time on my hands and why not just learn and study and kind of like expand my horizons a bit more. And so that's when Christopher and I both, we actually met like right before the pandemic at the end of 2019. And we were both very interested in just the earth and how we can tend it and create beautiful spaces, and knowing and feeling that there was something deeper within that realm. So then we ended up taking a permaculture course together through, at the time it was called the San Diego Sustainable Living Institute, but now it's Permaculture Lab, I believe, with Josh Robinson. And that online course honestly just expanded like so much of my capacity of understanding like what is possible that we can do in the world. And it really felt like, oh, like no duh, like we just need to tend and learn how to be one with the ground that's beneath our feet, because we are that. And so that's really how it expanded for me and my journey to getting to the lessons and the constant evolution and unfolding of what this kind of work has in store for people who are willing to like show up for it as well.
Yeah, I remember when we met, you mentioned permaculture, and at first I ignored you because I don't know why. It just didn't catch my attention or my ear, and you mention it over and over, and eventually we watched some videos, and there was a man named Jeff Lawton from Australia who we became obsessed with. He actually learned from Bill Mollison, who coined the term permaculture. So we did a lot of online learning through the pandemic and
hands-on learning.
Yeah, it was in the field and online, but I had studied at San Diego Mesa College for architecture, and that gave me a lot of foundation in design work. And I wanted to be an architect since I was really young. I always wanted to be an architect. But when the time came to transfer, I decided not to go that route. It was a lot of financial stress that I didn't want to take on. So I started working and decided I would start something and create something, you know, starting with self-employment. And from there, that really pushed me to, you know, learn as much as possible. So that's where I picked up the interest in permaculture. I took some horticulture classes at a nursery, and finally permaculture plus a past architecture experience was like a landscape architecture focus. Permaculture leans into a lot of landscape architecture, but it's also more than that. And there's a lot of structure around how people live and how we can create a more beneficial community for the earth and for our health. That really caught my attention and caught my interest.
You said this word a lot. And so for those who don't know, can you tell us a little bit about permaculture, what that means and what, why you gravitated towards it?
Permaculture is short for permanent culture. It's basically a frame of design that is a holistic design methodology. So in permaculture, we consider every aspect of the environment and every aspect of human physiology and social structure. We integrate all of those elements in what we design. And it could be anything from a backyard garden to urban planning to your business planning. All of those topics can be viewed with a permaculture lens.
And I'm going to add to that, because this question has been like, what is permaculture? Like, really, what is it? And today I was picking flowers at the farm, and I was like asking the flowers, I was like, how do you want to be represented? You know, like, what do you have to say? Like, what do you want to tell the world? And what came was that more than anything, permaculture is a pathway to, and for us humans to reconnect with our true, genuine nature. And permaculture really is just this sort of methodology that was coined, like Christopher said, by Bill Mollison. But what Bill was trying to share with the common man, I guess, was the intricacies of observation of nature and learning to create systems that mimic that piece of nature so that it benefits and creates more of a regenerative approach to lifestyle, living, growing food. And you can, like Christopher said, apply that to almost anywhere in your life. You can create a permaculture-based business model because you're thinking of the whole system. You're not just thinking of like one part of it.
Having a righteous relationship with nature and working harmonious, it seems, in a regenerative way. Mm-hmm. Really beautiful.
So in your line of work, what's been the most challenging thing? So permaculture, that could take place out in a farm in a rural area. But the work we do at Project New Village in relationship with you all is this thing called urban agriculture. So I'm sure that there's some challenges that present in this setting. And from your perspective, what are some of those kinds of challenges?
The politics.
Yeah.
the real life, like making it work in the systems. That's for me has been like not necessarily like seeing how it could work, but actually making it work because there's so much established. And I think that's what drew Christopher and I. We had this like grand vision. We were like, we just need a piece of land somewhere. Like we got to get out there and we could do the whole thing up. It's going to be amazing. And then we were like, but no one, like not everyone, and we definitely didn't and don't have the ability to go off and like get a piece of land somewhere. And the mass majority of human race is in cities and in urban areas. And we realized that that is where we need to bring these approaches like into. So that made so much, like that really excites me personally. And I think that's what like really drove Treedom to show up in the way that we have more recently. But then it's like, okay, this is what we want to do. And this is all of our ideas. How are we going to make it so that these ideas can cohesively fit in an urban setting through getting like policy on board and like being able to communicate with people who have the power to make decisions in the city to create these new structures and systems. And it's, I feel like that's been like the most interesting challenge. It's a good growth edge though. I feel like it's important to integrate.
There is definitely some really tough hurdles, not only with urban agriculture, but with a regenerative / permaculture based approach to urban agriculture. And it may not look as aesthetically pleasing mm-hmm. as traditional landscaping or traditional farm. And also with that is when you're taking a holistic approach to growing food in the city, it invites and offers a lifestyle adaptation. And many people aren't ready to make changes to integrate food and growing food as part of their lifestyle. And I think inspiring people or having gardens and projects like the one we're collaborating on inspires people to, or provokes thought and into what could be an alternative. And I think what is eventually going to develop and spread, far and wide.
You mentioned Australia earlier and that you have a passion for Australia, and I know you love traveling. Has any of your travels inspired your work, whether it be in seeing how food justice is done elsewhere and seeing how maybe farms are being transformed in other urban spaces, or just culturally and how other places are working with their land? I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, we've traveled quite a bit over the past several years. And just what's coming to me now is when we travel, we see farms next to people and their houses in neighborhoods. Here in the States, at least in San Diego, you don't see a farm unless you drive, you know, a few hours or out east where it's more rural. And the main difference in what I've noticed is agriculture is more integrated into society with where we've traveled, which Australia, Philippines, Japan, Jordan, those were the main countries I'm referencing now. Maybe you can share about our experiences in Australia and with Grant and Jordan with the internship.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that I personally came to when traveling was that the earth is the earth no matter where you go. There's like so much that we witnessed that is possible and feasible and similar to here. And also, like, there's so much that we could be doing. And honestly, to say a little bit about Japan, like, that place has such a dear spot in my heart because I feel their use of biomimicry within their city planning and the understanding of how important health is to them and longevity of being, you really see it in just like the makeup of their culture, right? Like, it was so cool to see, be on the train and like see like just little housings and then farmland like every so often, and it just felt more spacious. It felt like the food is close to the home. People are tending to the farms or tending to the food that's being grown because it's right there, you know, and it feels more communal and just like slower. Also, random fun fact about Japan, their transportation systems was based off of the way that mycelium grows.
Wow, really?
Mm-hmm. So it's utilized, and that's like one great example of biomimicry where they're like, what is the most effective path of least resistance that we can create for like a transportation system, because the biggest transportation system is in the world is the mycelium network with the mm-hmm. trees, etc. And so they utilized the way that it grew to run their train systems, and I'm like, that's so cool. So that's just like one thing that's like, wow, that's possible, and we can do that like in our systems and in what else we're deciding to create. And then in Australia, it was cool because there's a lot of the parts that we were in, I think mostly in southern Australia, it's a very similar climate to here. Also where we were in Jordan, it was also a very similar climate. So we kind of saw like different cultures existing with the land, but like similar land. Because it felt like, in Jordan at least, it felt like home. There were places where I was like, oh, this feels like we're going around the Salton Sea. Like, feels like we're in Ocotillo Wells. There was something so familiar about it. And then, but the culture was so different and the way that they farmed was so different. So that was cool.
We, in Jordan, we did get to visit a demonstration site called Greening the Desert. And that site was created by the Australian who we were mentioning, Jeff Lawton. And it's in the Dead Sea River Valley. And it's 400 meters below the sea level. So it's very dry and on the harsher side, climate-wise. And in the middle of this neighborhood of just rock and sand is this thriving, lush bush of vegetation that's growing food and that's serving the restaurant that's inside in the cafe, hosting students. and providing habitat, cooling the area, cleaning the air. And to see that hotspot of life in such a desertified area, almost at the same latitude as we are here, just gave a lot of hope for what we could bring back and implement here. And, you know, across the valley in Jordan, they were spraying pesticides and using inorganic fertilizer, but there's two routes we can take mm-hmm. when we want to think of how we relate to food. And that version was 1,000,000% yes. Let's take some steps to move towards that.
Really great. Yeah, when you said Jordan, I was trying to picture. All I could think of was Petra, Dead mm-hmm. Sea. I was like, what are they doing out there? So that's I was really curious because all I could think of was desert too. Mm-hmm. So really awesome.
That food forest is 10 years old too now. And so it's like amazing to see this incredible abundance of olives and date palms and like flowing water during the rainy season. And in Jordan too, they only get, about like 2 inches of rain per year, but all at once, typically. Like it's usually like 1 to 4 rains within the year, within a very short amount of time. And because it's so deserted, it just floods away. And like we've seen here, like that tends to happen as well. And that's based off of just I don't really know if it's a misunderstanding or just like a not consideration of water and how precious and what we can do to like slow the water from just rushing off into the ocean or into lower parts of the world. It's like, and then that's like another approach is finding ways within urban agriculture to look at the resources that do come, and even if they're scarce, but they come in short spurts. It's like, how can we almost like safeguard it so that it nourishes not only us, but the land in a way that's more revitalizing than stripping and destructive.
I think shortly after you came back from Jordan, then I talked about my personal property, right? I live here in this good food district and was trying to be an example for my neighbors in growing food. I'm no gardener. Y'all know that. But you all came and transformed my backyard, and you put different elements in there because I wanted to see different things. You drew them out. You explained them to me, and then you led groups of people to make this happen. Can you talk about some of the techniques you put in my yard that you could make available to other folks? I'm thinking y'all put a stairwell in my yard, but not the typical kind. It's made out of something else. So if you would explain that. And then you did these wicking beds, but you did them in a certain kind of way. So you've had some exposure, some experience, and you're sharing these things with other people. So talk to us about some of the stuff you've done right here in the Good Food District in southeastern San Diego, please.
So that was actually something that we learned in Jordan as well.
Wicking beds.
Were the wicking beds.
Wicking beds are great for arid climates, and we're in a semi-arid climate here in San Diego. They're really water efficient. So they're a type of raised bed that holds a reservoir of water at the bottom. And it really mitigates how much water you need to use. That's one of the elements we implemented. We also brought into the design a tire staircase. So we went around Facebook Marketplace and OfferUp on the side of the road, picking up tires, trash. Mm-hmm. And we turned it into a resource, saving a bunch of trees from being cut down to be turned into lumber to use. And that tire part of the project was an influence from Earthships, which is a whole nother conversation, but it's a type of building. Mm-hmm. And our ships use tires as part of their foundation and part of their walls. So we integrated that and got creative and said, let's use it as a staircase. And it got all of us up the slope. There's a pretty steep slope back in your yard. And now we can walk up all the way to the top. What else did we plant or install? The banana circle?
The banana circle.
We had a banana ceremony for the banana circle. And what that is it's about 6 to 8 feet wide. Bananas planted in kind of a half circle / crescent moon shape. In the middle, there's a hole, a pit that is filled with mulch. As that mulch breaks down into organic matter, it feeds the bananas. And we use that pit because it's really, bananas are heavy feeders.
They're hungry.
Nutrient-wise. Mm. So as we put the organic matter in there, it's feeding the bananas. We also integrated gray water into that pit. So the harvest sink has a pipe running from the house to the pit, and that also hydrates the bananas.
Gray water is basically just gently used water. So from like a bathroom sink or the laundry, we can use that water again because it hasn't been like highly polluted. For example, like a toilet would. Mm-hmm. That would be called black water.
You mentioned water systems at her house, and then they only get 2 inches of water. And Jordan, can you tell me your thoughts, one, about water preservation, rainwater, and specifically how Treedom Cooperative is approaching harvesting with gray water, and what we need to know as folks, and how we can be better stewards of the land when it comes to those things.
So rain and the water cycle regulates our climate. So how we treat the water directly corresponds to our relationship with the climate. If we can have reverence with how water gives us life, and water creates our food and regulates the temperature, beautifies spaces, there's a lot of really creative opportunities to use it with our infrastructure. We have a lot of storm drains and canals directing water away into the oceans, into treatment plants. And we want to remember that this water can grow the shade that we sit under to read a book or to have a snack, or it can grow flowers. It can really make or break what you can do on a certain site. We always want to plan the access to water first before any circulations or any garden elements. We want to make sure the water's in place, and we want to catch water off the roofs, off any hardscapes like parking lots or streets, sidewalks. And if we can store that in the ground, that's our number one priority. If we can catch it with a rain tank, that's also a priority. But the main thing we want to shoot for is keeping it in the ground, rehydrating the water table. So when we do have droughts, because those are inevitable, the trees and the plants have some storage to pull from. And that means less extreme droughts, increased vitality and longevity of plants. We can grow tropicals here if they have access to that groundwater. And gray water is a whole different thing, but we use so much water in our everyday activity, and a lot of it can be used back into our landscapes.
Mm-hmm. I think about 75% of the water usage, right? Is it like 75%?
Is irrigation.
Is irrigation and for landscaping in most places, especially San Diego. Mm-hmm. I mean, this the landscaping in San Diego is very beautiful. I feel like you see so many beautiful gardens and, you know, everyone loves to grow something in their spaces if they can. So it's just imagining that we use so much of our water to irrigate our landscapes, and we could be utilizing that water just more efficiently, more effectively. We owe a lot of, if not all of, our wisdom and knowledge that we received from water harvesting through catching H2O. And Brooke Sarzin, who was our teacher and mentor, still our mentor. We've had a lot of really amazing teachers, and that I feel like is a huge foundation of ours into what we're offering now. And I think that, honestly, the water systems that we like to implement and have in the back of our consciousness always when we're designing and implementing things is, it's kind of the foundation of like everything we do. At least speaking for me, I'm sure this is probably similar for Chris, but it's like without water, we can't be doing anything that we're doing. We won't even be here if there's no water on this planet. Like, it is so sacred and so special to have such a beautiful memory base that is water here with us, and to be able to restructure our relationship to it, I think is a beautiful way to sort of begin making these like evolutionary movements towards a brighter future, especially in places like San Diego and other deserts where we receive what, like another like 80% of our water from the Colorado River. Don't quote me on percentages, but it's really high. Like, it's crazy. And the Colorado River is continuously getting lower and lower every year. So it's just like, it's like being aware of the water systems that we are being fed by and understanding that, you know, every time we flush the toilet, like even if it's just urine, you know, like we're flushing what, a gallon or two down the drain that's just going to like a waste management system that's then being pushed out to the ocean. And it's like learning the systems to then understand like the impact that we can make on the water that we're using every day. And a lot of the systems that we implement with Treedom and that we look for, tried to do our best with, is to utilize water as a resource that is, it's more integrated, and we try to use as little as we can, but also if we are going to use it, we're going to want to use it again and again and again before it fully leaves, hopefully not leaves the property at all, and hopefully just sinks in and replenishes the system entirely.
Something that we're working on right now with PNV is the garden on Market Street in Uvas. That's really special because it's all fed and irrigated with rainwater. We have about 4,400 gallons of storage, and we have four different structures that we're catching water off the roofs of. And to my knowledge, this is the first community-based garden fed with solely rainwater in San Diego. And I would love for this to be a demonstration and display of what is possible here in the city and elsewhere. And it's really fulfilling to have had the community that has come and experienced the garden and their awe and inspiration and wonder with the transformation. It's been since October, so it's been pretty quick, but it's going to continue to heal people and give people a brighter thing to focus on and some hope, because that's what it gives me.
Hope. We're also working on another project. It's in the planning and the dreaming stage, but this is a big step forward for our partnership, and that's being able to put a community garden in a public park. Mm-hmm. We've been given permission to dream and to plan it, and that's what we're doing at this point. You know, this is spring of 2025, so we started today with asking people, what do you want to see in a community garden? Mm-hmm. But because we have a unique perspective here. We don't want to just make any community garden. You see how we push the boundaries, and we're doing that at UVIS. We want to do that even more at this garden. So these two came up with a plan I hadn't seen anyplace else, and I've been doing this community garden thing since, what, 2010, 2008? But they started talking about these pods, not individual beds that people can take and grow what you want. That's one thing. But there's other things in terms of building community. And in our community, we face illnesses at a higher rate than other communities, diabetes, hypertension. And the person who the park is named after, he died related to Alzheimer's. And I'm thinking that has some implication with your diet and what you take too. And then we have asthma. I don't know asthma yet, but it seems like lungs are involved there and some air. And so we want to look at these areas of disease or areas where we can do prevention work and grow foods that help those situations and make it culturally relevant to the people in the community where they live. So we're going to test that out. It's not seen that anywhere else. Y'all brought this up. And we're going to see what we can do with that. And in the next 90 days or so, we'll see what community thinks about it.
Mm-hmm. So this came from your head?
It came from Tree Plant Guild. Mm-hmm. So okay. It's a permaculture idea where you have your main tree and a bunch of other species to support it, kind of like companion planting for people that garden. And Diane offered the idea that on top of these companion plants, we also layer in culturally relevant groupings and pods that lean towards one or the other orientation of what this does for your body. Diet-wise, the food is really linked to our health. And if we can curate something that would be beneficial for someone with a certain diagnosis to eat or to take, that would, you know, check a lot of boxes and just provide a new way to go to the pharmacy, maybe. Plants used to be what people took as medicine before a couple hundred years ago. Mm-hmm. So maybe this will inspire in an ancient future methodology.
Seems like this is a good example of how what Treedom does affects environmental and social justice in a way. And it looks like you work in social justice and community activism. Any more that you can speak of that maybe gardening or this work does as it builds out communities? And I almost want to say creates equity, but in a sense, even what you just said, you know, any more work or anything about that that Treedom specializes in or wants to move into in the future?
I think for me, the ability to provide space where any human being and their families or themselves can go and feel connected to the earth is something that we need to create and just support in any way possible. And for me, it creates connectivity not only with other people, but it's something we have in common. We live on this earth. We are of this earth. And when we feel disconnected to the earth, I feel personally that, at least in my own experience, when I have felt disconnected to the earth, I feel so alone. And I don't feel this like swirling of creativity and beauty that is this life that we get to share with every person that we see in our daily lives. And when we can offer spaces where people can feel that connection, I feel inevitably it allows for more people and more families to like feel supported and feel loved and cared for. So for me, that's really like how I personally see it on a grand scale, like opening the door for people to reconnect with themselves and to the earth and to their communities. And the more spaces that we have, the more opportunity that those people can have for that.
Well, thank you for your time. This was informative. I learned a lot more about Treedom than I knew. I was blessed to be out there when we did the seed ball throwing that first day and what you all have done with Treedom. And I'm just excited to see what you continue to do with UBIS in the city. I hope that our listeners really learned a lot and also get to work with you and understand the work that you do. I think it's really important. And I'm happy to have met you guys. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you. This was awesome.
Yeah.
It's always good talking to Jordan and to Christopher. Working with them has been the best relationship ever, and I hope that was evident in this episode this time.
Absolutely. I'm actually inspired. There's a lot I didn't know, and I learned more about being efficient and being intentional with my water choices. And so I think this episode was great, and I think everybody will get a lot from it.
Yeah. Best we could have done for Earth Day 2025. Absolutely.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.